So, Nancy, since you've been gone from University of Illinois, how long now?
2001 was my first year here, so I guess 8 years.
8 years already,
Yeah,
yeah.
seems like
So what do you
yesterday.
miss about the U of I being at the U of M?
Well, they're actually very similar schools, Big Ten University, and I think varying years we have different levels of football teams, both U of I and U of M, which we won't talk about football right now,
Yeah,
but
neither doing too well. Have done too well.
that's right. But oh, of course, there's many things. I have very, very fond memories of my time. I was at the U of I. I was there for 7 years and had wonderful colleagues and wonderful friends and neighbors. And my our Bill's and my second boy was born there in Carroll Hospital. So we have very, very fond memories of our time in Champaign and the fabulous music school that is a part of the university.
What have you found, if anything, different about the students or about the programs at the two schools? I'm just curious.
I think there's many more similarities than there are differences. I think I had a wonderful oboe class at the University of Illinois, and I have a wonderful oboe class at the University of Michigan. And ironically, I had some Michigan residents that were my students when I was at the University of Illinois, and I have some Illinois residents that are my students here at the University of Michigan. So I think if there is any difference, it probably is that almost my whole studio here is out of state, whereas Illinois, I was really fortunate to have a lot of in-state fine oboe players in state, from Chicago and surrounding suburbs. So I mean, that might be a difference that the oboe studio here and I think the school in general functions a lot more as a school that draws from many, many states instead of just Michigan. Other than that, it might be a little bigger music school as far as number of faculty, but there really are more similarities than differences, and I think Ann Arbor is a similar town to Champaign-Urbana as well.
When you're, what, no matter where you're teaching people, what do you find to be particularly challenging about teaching the oboe?
Well, there's a lot that's challenging about playing the oboe. So I think that probably the most challenging part of teaching the oboe is figuring out what is going wrong with a student and their ability to produce the sound that they want or to produce the technical fluidity that they're striving for. And it's sort of similar to being a good doctor, I would think. You take a lot of symptoms and you try and figure out based on the symptoms that you're hearing and that you're seeing in their embouchure and that they're describing of the difficulties they're having, and you try and take all those symptoms and first figure out a diagnosis and then figure out a way to correct the problem.
So what are some of those challenges as a player about playing the oboe?
Well, I think that the oboe is very similar to the human voice in that the pitch really can be all over. I mean, it's not an instrument that is inherently ever in tune. And of course, we're making a reed to play virtually every day. We play a different reed, and even if we're playing the same reed we played the day before, a reed that was sharp yesterday could be flat today. A reed that was too easy to blow yesterday could be too hard to blow today. So pretty much every day we have a new instrument to play on and a new instrument to adapt to.
For somebody who doesn't know about an oboe reed, see what you can do about sort of bringing it down to earth. What is an oboe reed like, and why is it so finicky?
Well, the oboe reed is really the voice of the oboe, and it's a double reed, meaning that it's two pieces of cane that are tied together and they vibrate against each other. And every oboist makes a reed to suit not only their taste in sound quality, but to play at a certain pitch level based on the ensemble that they're playing in. In European orchestras, they play at a higher pitch than they do in the U.S., so you make a different read. So it determines the pitch, it determines the tone color, it determines really everything about what it takes to play the oboe. It is the instrument much more than the piece of wood and silver keys that you see oboe players holding.
So during lessons, I don't know if it's the typical lesson, but I have heard that oboe players spend a lot of time learning from their teachers not only how to play the instrument, but also how to make the reeds.
Definitely, yeah. Reed making is a huge part of being an oboe teacher and an oboe student. What I like to tell my students is that you can be the world's greatest musician and the world's greatest oboe player, but if you can't make a reed, the world will never know what a beautiful player you are and what a great musician you are. If you are a great reed maker and you consistently make a reed that responds, that plays in tune, and has a pleasing sound, well, you'll go very far in our profession because the conductor will point at you and you'll blow and there's going to be a nice sound that's in tune and it speaks when the conductor points his baton at the oboe player. So, yeah, it is a huge part, and it does have a role in every oboe lesson.
But some oboists do buy their reeds from people who are particularly noted as reed makers, don't they?
Not so much anymore. In the old days, that was very typical. Some of our greatest oboists, back in Toscanini's time, even in the early Cleveland Orchestra with Zell. Those oboe players would typically rely on their students, ironically, to make reeds for them. And unfortunately, for us oboe teachers, that's really not the case anymore. Everyone has to make their own oboe reeds, and obviously students buy their reeds, but I see the trend is exactly the opposite. I see students are making their reeds sooner rather than later, and I see some students at the age of 12, 11, 12, 13 years old starting to make oboe reeds.
So in a very literal way, oboists craft their own sound.
That's a very good way to put it, exactly. And I heard a great quote from Joe Robinson once. He said, the reed that, it is our instrument, it's our voice, and our voice could be Kathleen Battle one day and Ethel Merman the next.
And who is Joe Robinson?
Joe Robinson was the former principal oboist of the New York Philharmonic and a wonderful player and person.
That's a great line. I'm going to have to write that down, I think. So at your master class on Thursday, will you be talking about reed making or will you be just focusing on the playing?
Well, I think it's impossible to give a master class and not approach the reed at some point. I don't think that we'll necessarily have reed making time where we actually get our knives out and work on the reeds. But a lot of times what I'm asking a student to do is not possible with the particular reed they have. If the reed that they selected to play that day is too stiff or too easy or too sharp or too flat, I'm sure there will be comments about the reed, whether we want to go into actually fixing them right there. That could be opening a can of worms.
Yeah, probably. And on your recital, what's on the program?
Well, first of all, it's such a pleasure to come back and play with an old dear friend and colleague, Eric Dalheim, and I'm so looking forward to, of course, not only seeing him after several years, but playing together again, because we sure collaborated an awful lot, and we even made a CD together back in the 90s, so I'm so looking forward to that. We will be playing the Poulenc Oboe Sonata for oboe and piano. I'll also play the Heinz Holliger Sonata, which is unaccompanied, and we have a set of jazz-oriented pieces by a young oboist, actually a young female oboist, and they're terrific too. So the three of those pieces is about 45 minutes, and with the class starting immediately after at 2 o'clock, I think we'll probably leave it there unless we decide on a quick encore.
Well, yeah, that's a nice variety. How often are those jazz pieces played? I haven't heard of them anyway.
Well, I play them an awful lot, and I've sort of, I think I put them on the map a little bit because I hear that they're selling a lot of copies. So that's great. I think it's a really wonderful piece. It was only written a couple of years ago. So I really enjoy playing them. And it seems that when I do play them, a lot of folks come up and ask how to order them.
Well, that should certainly be interesting because one doesn't normally think of the oboe as a jazz instrument. Or do you improvise in those pieces?
No, it's completely. Sometimes I put in a few little glisses or a grace note here and there, but I would hardly call it improvising. I'm not in any way trained to do that.
Yeah, that would be you'd need to spend some time with some jazz bands, I imagine.
That's an amazing skill. I wish I knew how to do it.
So we do know that you will not be talking about improvisation at your masterclass then.
No, I don't think so. That would be a relatively short topic.
Well, I it's exciting that you're going to come back to the university, and I'm sure folks who knew you and everybody else who has heard of you will be looking forward to hearing you play and hearing what you have to say to some of the students here.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you again after all these years, and I'm really looking forward to being in my old hometown for a while.